Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning, 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. So, come Jerry Carl in about 30 minutes, running for Congress here in the 1st Congressional District, and then in the 11 o'clock, Will Hampson will make time for us. So make sure you stick around for that. Recapping the news here, Graham Plattner, and all of a sudden, I mean, right now on MS Now, they got potential replacements, question mark, and they have eight people who could run in Graham Plattner's place. Guys, the fix is in on this. They want him out. They see that Susan Collins is running away with it and decided that they needed to move. Because of the Nazi tattoo at the first round of assault allegations didn't do it for you, and you stuck with this guy, you don't have credibility. You don't have a leg to stand on. But that's this is what they're looking at here. It's got Janet Mills, Troy Jackson. Well, that's all I can see there. The Congressman Golden there from Maine. They're looking for a replacement, and it's just kind of funny that it's a problem for these guys. They got a problem. They're supposed to do well in November, and it's looking, I mean, you know, they still should do well, Democrats, that is, but maybe not as rosy as it did maybe just a few months ago. 251-343-0106. No more U.S. in the World Cup. How are you handling this tragic occasion? How are you coping? Charlie Kirk trial still underway. That's sort of where things are now. The news cycle is starting to pick back up a little bit coming out of the 4th of July lull. Let's roll through some text here. Mike asks, do a lot of folks in Baldwin County go to Walmart? Because of the Spring Hill area, you don't go to the Walmart unless you are armed and don't mind risking your safety. I think that may be just a Spring Hill Walmart thing. The Daphne Walmart is always feels safe there. I don't know. Maybe it just depends on the neighborhood, Mike. But thanks for the question. Toothless Bammer. Jeff, about 3 months ago, Walmart switched from the New York Stock Exchange to the NASDAQ. I thought it was a brilliant move. Walmart is more of a tech company. God bless Walmart. It was scary. Andrew Gillum came across as really, really close to beating DeSantis. He did, like, just within a few points. But, I mean, actually lived under a DeSantis administration. It was not good, guys. Florida dodged a bullet there, and now we see where his where his life has taken him, and I will pray for him. I mean, I you know, don't wish this on anybody. But hopefully he could get things together. Name texture, certainly not challenging your credibility as I followed you for many years. I know who you are, one of the best at what you do. However, in the light of Rob Holbert and Lanyap Mobile constantly throwing shade at 18, 19 days, I wonder what your thoughts are all about this. I see that you react with a thumbs up on his post, but he's saying 1819 is dirty. 1819 is not dirty. He doesn't like that we won't tell him who our donors are. Doesn't like the narrative. My last conversation with Rob Holbert was in the middle of this radio show. He calls me during a commercial break with a profanity-laced tirade. And that was it. I didn't get a word in. I was in the middle of a radio show. Didn't even get to speak my mind. I'd worked for him for 20 years. I stuck with him. They came after him at the University of South Alabama. And this is what you get for that. I haven't talked about it, but since you asked, and why he's got this thing, look, you also go after Tuberville. We've done the story. We talked about the residency stuff. But I don't know what the deal is. You know, it's kind of unspoken rule of questioning motives and things like this, but here we are. I don't know. It's not the same guy that I knew 20 years ago. It's kind of sad. But you move on. This thing happens in journalism. But he's really got it out for 1819 News. Like he's entitled to know what our financials are. We're not entitled to that. We're not entitled to your financials. And you're not entitled to anybody else's. You have freedom of the press and freedom of association. People are free to do with their money what they want to. It was an AI-generated article, and it was totally, totally incorrect. They pulled it, and it had claimed that John Wall was the founder of 1819 News, and it ran 24 of 27 local newspapers out of business. Just absolutely not true. John Wall did not start 1819 News, or we have not ran newspapers out of business. And it was pretty obvious that there was something amiss there, but he took it seriously and he reached out and he had questions. I just like, you know, using a phony news story to validate your fishing expedition is kind of bush league. But like I said, it just makes me sad. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know why he has chosen this fight, but hey, this is the business we're in. Ricardo, baseball, football, rugby, soccer, tennis, golf, and maybe highlight because I saw a kid on Miami Vice in the opening credits are my favorite. Basketball blows. Well, in America though, like the three to four major sports and our best athletes play those. They don't go play soccer. That's just why we're not competitive in the big leagues on soccer. Tim, this guy talks way too much and too fast. Is he really from Alabama? He's from the Shoals. He's our state auditor. Good morning, Jeff. I'm not an everyday listener, but I really did enjoy Andrew's interview. Well, thank you for listening today. Take it where we can. Killer Bees, I bet a DC bartender knows a lot of secrets. You are right about that. My wife and I got to know some of the people who worked in the service industry up there. They had a lot of stories. And there's always the gossip mill. But anyway. Let's see here. And then I got a screenshot of something from MSN caught on camera. Dante police identified 22-year-old Jaquel Williams as the man caught on camera. Well, I don't know what that's about, but thanks for the text, Mike. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is hit me up there. Let's see here. Something else talked about here, and I'm keeping close watch on this, but this attack in the Strait of Hormuz on a tanker ship that may have gotten a little too close to the Iranian shoreline or something, but it's forced the price of oil up. And why do I bring it up? Now, gas prices are easing. They're not easy quite fast enough. I was in Georgia. I think I paid like $2.50 a gallon for gas somewhere, one of the racetracks. But it's easing. And what it needs to do is it needs to ease a whole lot more before November, probably before Labor Day. And this whole, I don't know if it was ill-advised or if it was questionable, this military exercise against Iran. It certainly has split the Republican Party. At least some of the influencers, y'all know who I'm talking about. But there's a war within the Republican Party over foreign policy and this, you know, what was perceived to be a departure from neoconservatism didn't quite get there, did it? You got to think about this. I mean, and I know John Bolton left in sort of disgrace, but they brought in John Bolton for a time. Donald Trump was, he never was going to invade a ground invasion, but wasn't going to sit quietly and idly by. I think the one time the media applauded Trump, the left media, the one time was when he launched a few Tomahawk missiles at Syria. After they had, I guess it had to do with their chemical warfare stashes. And I'll never forget it. It was like the one time, like Joe Scarborough and people like that say, hey, he actually seems presidential today. Now, they didn't really get on board with Iran. And like Rachel Maddow, she stuck to her guns when they launched that first strike before the multiple strikes about a year ago. But there was a perception out there that this was not going to be a part of foreign policy. And I don't know, does it hurt? It seems to have helped him with the Lindsey Grahams, but you're always going to have those guys anyway. And now that they've kind of reined it in a little bit, there's some remorse. Like, we needed to do more. We can't let up. We had our foot on the gas. What are we doing here? You heard this. I just don't trust those Iranians. And then the left really seized on it. This was a loss, a military loss, which just cannot be further from the truth. There's no way you can, from casualties to military assets, how you could label it a loss. What I would like to see was how effective was this, an honest assessment. We don't know. People are a little reluctant to criticize Trump if you're in Republican circles on this. They are. They just are. But they haven't really told us, well, we think that you should do more, or we think that this is just right. A lot of finger pointing at the Israeli government. I heard Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday on Fox News. Everything's fine with me and Donald Trump. Even though the White House suggests otherwise. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Jerry Carl coming up here shortly, so stay around for that. I believe he's on the road as well. Named Texture Democrats own all the oil people. I don't know. I think some of their, I mean, they, corporate America is not necessarily ideological. Maybe big picture. They're not as consumed with the R versus D, like sports ball aspect of it. I think that they are evaluating everything in the terms of shareholder price, you know, who they can work with on the Hill to achieve a better business climate for them. And in some ways, it's for them and not for the consumer. There you have some Democrats who would just have a nationalization of the oil companies if you could. Keith, here we go again. 1819 News versus Lanyap Mobile is like comparing the Wall Street Journal versus National Enquirer. Lanyap is clickbait while 1819 is reporting actual news. Well, thank you for that. No, I think they do good journalism at Lanyap, and I wouldn't have worked for them as long as I had if I didn't at least believe in the mission there. You need a local newspaper. You need somebody who understands the ins and outs of Mobile City politics, Mobile County politics, Baldwin County politics. It's hard to do that from a state level. And now, this adventure into criticizing other media outlets for whatever reason. Not that I'm totally innocent of that, because I find AL.com to be just reprehensible in the way they cover Alabama. But it's not something. It's become a fascination, I guess. I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of sad. I don't know what the threat is here. What the Fourth Estate's duties are. As if something is getting too powerful, or something keeping the powerful in check here. But that seems to be the direction we're going with that. As if something untoward or illegal is going on, it's not. May not like what you see, may disagree with a lot of it, but it's not like a government official. The whole mission of 1819 News was, you looked at the media landscape in this state, and it wasn't even in a way to like promote a conservative narrative. We don't need to do that. We're already conservative. The state is. The state's already there. But it was underserved. You had left-wingers who were the gatekeepers in news, and they were picking and choosing what stories were the most important, and they didn't necessarily, they weren't in line with what the market was wanting, what the demand in place was. That's the whole point. I mean, guys, you know, we could tell you to be against gambling or pray in schools or anti-abortion or whatever all day long. But you're already there, a lot of you. You don't need a news outlet telling you what to think. But what you do need are stories that you care about. Not another plea for Medicaid expansion. Not some bleeding heart liberal diatribe about the woes of a place that can't manage its own finances to have sewer and water. I mean, with AL.com, it's a website that's about Alabama, but not necessarily for Alabama. It's not for people within the confines of the state. It's for people generally who want to read about Alabama from elsewhere. That's the whole point. You don't really have that. 251-343-0106. We'll pick it up on the other side. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Hear it if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will.
to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, Will Hampson for P2 Public Affairs. We'll talk Graham Plantner and other things going on in the backdrop of this. We're getting into the election cycle. November's not that far away. I know it's only July, but there's still a few primaries out there unsettled, and we will explore what this means for Democrats going forward with Will in the 11 o'clock hour. In the meantime, joining us now, he's formerly the congressman for 1st Congressional District, and now he is running for his seat again. We're almost a month out, believe it or not, already. But Jerry Carl is with us on the line. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I am doing fantastic.
Well, that August 11th is creeping up on us. I mean, it'll be July 11th on Saturday. It doesn't necessarily feel quite as rambunctious as the last election cycle, but how are you feeling about the campaign today?
We feel good. I mean, it's not feeling like the last election cycle because obviously we don't have a lot on the ballot. And those of us that are candidates, we're focused on trying to get our handful of folks out to vote. They anticipate about a 7% turnout of votes, which breaks down to about 17,000 votes, which is scary. I mean, to elect your next House member as a Republican Party and let 7% of the people decide who that person's going to be is scary. But we have to work with what we've got. So we're all focused on getting our folks out to vote. And that becomes more of a very targeted group of people. So people won't see a lot of us on TV. They'll hear us on the radio. They'll get the nice mailers. I call it trash mail. You know, they read it between the mailbox and the trash can. And if we get that much read. It's just a different type of race, and it feels different too.
Right.
It really does.
Just, you don't see, there's not as many signs and things like that, you know, and then the mail hasn't really even, you know, we were so inundated with mail this last election cycle.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, I'm supposed to say all of mine is very positive. I have no negative pieces coming out. I have no hit pieces. I don't want any hit pieces. I want to stay positive. So, that's the good thing. So read mine, and you'll get a smile on your face.
The Trump endorsement came for you. Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, that was huge. We knew it was coming. We couldn't talk about it. We waited quite a while, we got it. It was it has really set fire to our campaign. It certainly added a lot of credibility to what we're doing. It's not the first time I've gotten an endorsement from him. This is actually the third time I've received an endorsement from Trump, and I am very appreciative of it. And it certainly is showing. We're picking up endorsements from virtually everybody from the Republican Party and several other groups. Not to by all means put Alpha top the list. But we've picked up, I don't know, 20 plus different endorsements. So it's feeling good right now. We're working hard. We're trying to push that Trump endorsement as much as we can, make sure people know that he does trust us and he does look forward to working with us. And we'll get out there and do our thing.
Well, Ed, you know, the Trump endorsement, it came, but you're as far as I can tell, you got the delegation on your side backing you for the most part. You and Katie Britt have come to, you got her support. Not a formal endorsement or whatever, but you got some support there. The things seem to be kind of coming together everywhere else.
It is. The entire Alabama delegation is supporting us. So we're very happy with that. I mean, we have to work. We have to work together if we're going to get things accomplished for the state. And that's our goal, is represent the state of Alabama as a delegation. And we will do that. The Trump endorsement is just icing on the cake. So we'll try to push those. I don't think people automatically vote for you just because of an endorsement. They're going to look at other things and other factors. And I encourage folks to look at my voting record, to look at my 4 years in Congress. I think they'll find a conservative person that's always been there to support the conservative will. And that's what I'm running on. I don't have to tell you what I'm going to do. All you have to do is look at my record and understand what I have done, and knowing that I'm going to go back and do the same, that same conservative focus.
We'll talk about this. And I you know, I was looking, it's been a week, so I don't know if it's changed or not, but things are starting to look up for Republicans in the cycle in general. I know you got your own race, but big picture wise, I think Cook Political Report, Larry Sabato, these prognosticators, they still are leaning toward Republicans holding on to the House. And that seems like a real possibility coming out of this round of redistricting.
So I got asked to fly down to Palm Beach, which I'm in Palm Beach right now, to speak to a group of Republicans. They call them the vanguards. They're the up and coming young Republicans in the House. And some of the things we're seeing down here, and some of the things we're talking about, which is not but a 24-hour for me, but it, you know, they're talking about the Democrat Party. You know, we're talking about the progressives that are trying to take that party over. It's going to really split them up, because we know not every Democrat is going to support communism or socialism. So it's going to start a massive split, and that split has already started, and we're going to take advantage of it as far as the House is concerned. I think we're going to surprise some folks. I think we're going to take more seats than we actually are giving credit for now. The closer we get, it seems we're picking one up here and picking one up there as far as the news sources are saying. But I think a lot of our Democrat friends will probably stay at home when they figure out that, you know, their party is trying to lean more towards a communist base, socialist base. So I think it's a very positive thing for the Republican Party, and we have to take advantage of it today.
Well, and that's an interesting point. You know, these DSA candidates, Democrat Socialist of America candidates, they're winning in the Democratic Party. And you look at it, and what is causing this? Why are they? Why all of a sudden is this the thing where you're having these incumbents like Dan Goldman or whoever losing? And you look closer at it, and I just think this is the civil war that was bound to happen in the Democratic Party, that they've held it back for so long. And Nancy Pelosi was like the queen of this. She controlled the purse strings, but at some point, they kind of got to go through what you guys had to go through, Republicans in general, I think. Let's just say that they do win the House on November 3rd, that they're going to have a real, because it's not going to be by a big margin if it happens. And the second part of that is there's no real like heir apparent here to be speaker. You got to win all those. You got to win a majority in the entire chamber, not just in the caucus. And I don't know who that person would be.
I don't think they know either. I don't think Jeffries is going to be the person. I think they've all but told him that he's not going to be their pick. I quite honestly cannot see them taking the House. The question to me is how much are we going to take the House by? You know, we need some, Speaker Johnson, I was with him a week and a half ago and spent the whole day traveling with him. And I mean, what he's going through just to get anything across that floor. I mean, he's having to make deals with all these Republican members, and some of the stuff that they want is just undoable. I don't see anybody in the Democrat Party that has that ability to do that. Republicans, we can negotiate and work together, but the Democrat parties are becoming so splintered and so angry at one another that, yes, they're fisting to go through. If they do win, it's going to be another Kevin McCarthy scenario.
Right.
You know, it's going to be two weeks trying to figure out who's going to actually be the speaker. And for once, we can sit by as Republican, I can sit back and smile and watch it. I don't want to give the House up, though. I don't want to give the Senate up. And we definitely don't have to give the presidency up. So, and the way you win is to vote. Every vote counts. I tell people all the time, we've got a member in Congress. We call her six-pack. She's a little bitty thing, and she won by 6 votes. So her nickname is Six Pack on the floor. Every vote counts. And I don't care if you know it's going to be a Republican, still vote. We've got to show the Republican strength in the state of Alabama. Well, that's very important.
The Democratic Party, too, for the last, well, now 10 years, ever since Trump stepped on the scene, it's just whipped into this frenzy. And the frenzy, I get it, it's a, you know, ad hominem, Trump, blah, blah, blah. But, like, the policy stuff has to come along with it. Like, you know, and the socialism, the socialist ideas, I think are kind of bred out of this, like, frenzy. And it's causing, like, more, it's causing a radicalization. And it's getting people, you know, with these far-left ideologies, it's giving them a lane. It's created a lane for them. And this is sort of, you know what, this is the bed they made, and now they have to lie in it.
It's the same old story. They want to be like Robin Hood. They want to steal from the rich and give to the poor. And you look at some of these quote-unquote rich people that started with absolutely nothing and have managed to build these businesses. And that's the American story. I mean, I'm one of them. I started with nothing. I don't consider myself rich, but I'm not going to miss any meals. But in the standards of the world, everybody in America is rich. Everybody is rich. I mean, we don't. I just had a conversation with a guy who says, "Oh, kids are going to bed starving." I think that's more of a parent issue than it is a food issue. Because I promise you, I'll do everything I can do to make sure that child eats. But unless that parent focuses on feeding that child too, then we've got a problem. So we've got some parent issues in this country that we've got to address. How do we address it? How do we push and teach them moral, put a good compass in them of some type? I don't know how. But, I think a good job and a little hard work never hurt anybody. And I think we need to get some of these people off these social programs and get them back to work. And let the children watch that. Let the children grow from that. I mean, we get our strength from watching our parents struggle when we were young. And we pass that on to our kids, I hope. That's part of the heritage that we want them to have. So, but, you know, everybody wants to talk about, you know, on the socialist side, they want to talk about starving children and taking from this and giving to that. These multinational corporations, they're pouring billions of dollars into our economy. They're creating the jobs. So, you know, let's don't just keep pushing them down. Well, I think they should pay their fair share of taxes. Nobody's arguing that.
Dale Jackson and I were talking about this yesterday. The culture, and there's not always a government solution for a cultural problem.
No.
But it is enabled. The culture is enabled by what the government is doing. So, and you look at Alabama in particular, you have low workforce participation rates. You have these impediments to work. Now, you know, when you talk to people, the two impediments that I hear, a lot of people just can't pass a drug test. You know, so how do you grapple with that? And then the other part of it is child
care.
Don't
take drugs.
Well,
deal with that.
So it's a mental health thing. And, you know, but the other half of that is child care and not having a place for, you know, you have a lot of single parents. But these are all like problems that stem from these things in the culture that have been enabled by government social programs. And so it's just like this self-exacerbating thing that exists in our society.
Well, and I agree with that. But, you know, at some point, place, and time, we as individuals have to take responsibilities. I don't do drugs. I don't drink. And that's my choice. That is my choice. And now if somebody wants to do drugs and drink and their children are hurt by that, at some point, place, and time, that person has to take responsibility for that. I don't consider a drunk or an addict. I don't consider that a mental disability. To me, that is a choice. Now, there are some addicts that I'm sure fall in a different category than that, But people just being lazy, Jeff. I mean, I just don't tolerate laziness. I never have in my businesses. I haven't tolerated it with people that work for me. And I certainly don't tolerate it in my own self. So, you know, we as a country have got to quit focusing on giving stuff away and start helping people understand that they get a lot of self-worth by earning it themselves.
Yeah, you just wonder what leads people down the path of addiction. Is it a sense of hopelessness or whatever? And, you know, like, what else do you have to live for? And you're going to go do this. And like, getting people on the right track. And I don't know. I mean, is that something government's really capable of doing? And it probably isn't. But what it can do is not enable the behavior and not through social programs being the subsistence that they live off of and take care of their kids off of. Then then you have to have some other motivations here in society to get people around these impediments.
Well, I get frustrated, you know, the methadone program, for example. I mean, you know, if you're on fentanyl and your own opiums, you know, you can get off of it, quote unquote, by going on methadone. And I don't know how long they stay on methadone, but I know people that have been on it for years. I don't see how trading one drug's any better than the other drug. So, you know, I think mankind, there's always been a percentage of people that have, you know, alcoholic natures or drug addiction. I've got an addicted nature myself. I watch myself very close, how I do things, when I do it, why I do it. But, you know, I'm responsible for myself. That's the difference. I understand that. So, at some point, you know, we can't blame the government. We can't expect the government to fix everything. That's not what we're here for.
Right.
We're here for smaller government. We're here for protection of this country. We're here, you know, to provide infrastructures, for, you know, road systems and things for society to grow. All this other social stuff is just, it sounds sweet and nice, but it's just an empty pit that we just keep pouring money into.
Carson, we got to leave it there, but you're always very kind to make time for this program, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Jeff. God bless you.
Jerry Carr, ladies and gentlemen, let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Daddy never was the Cadillac kind. He said something just glitter and shine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Tuesday morning. Will Hampson coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. So please stick around for that. Rock and Roll Doctor asks, when is the last time Mitch McConnell voted on the Senate floor's absence? Is helpful to save act passing? Get her done first. Tub a reel before you begin harassing an Alabama journalism entity. I do know this. Where when I was in D.C., had to be right before the election, I guess it was April, I did see Mitch McConnell being wheeled around in his wheelchair. He was on Capitol Hill. I don't know if he voted or not. But the rumors, I mean, they're starting to pick up here that there's some real problems there. And I don't know. I just, we can pray for him. That's what we got to do. Let's see. This is from Mike. The socialist move is because of how affordable things have become. It's a dumb logical decision to go that route, but that's why. 65-plus crowd of came of age when you could support a household of one off one income, and now you're lucky if you could support a household with two jobs. The 65-plus crowd have caused it by inflating their hard assets, all while bringing cheap foreign labor to sustain their way of life for in retirement years. Yeah, I mean, you're right. To have a comfortable life in America, it's way more expensive But there's something to this too, Mike, that our wants, our desires, our standard of living has gone up. So I think there's something to that as well. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Sweet Southern Comfort, carry on.